Something bothering your car? Hearing a wobble or a whine where there should be a hum? Our next guest has heard many of these over the years. Zach Edwards is the owner of Ashland Automotive, and he's our partner in a monthly segment we call The Squeaky Wheel. In this context, you are the squeaky wheel. Give us a call or email to talk about automotive issues you've had or are currently having. We'll be focusing on four-wheel and all-wheel drive in this segment. Join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So I do remember a couple of years ago driving a Subaru for a station car at work and being told, when I referred to it as four-wheel drive, I was like, no, that's all-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. What's the difference? Well, there is a difference, it turns out.
Yeah, there's a big difference in that four-wheel drive, you can select the mode you want to be in. You can be in two-wheel drive or four-wheel drive, depending on, some cars have a push button, other cars have a shifting lever. Mm-hmm. But all-wheel drive cars are just in four-wheel drive all the time. And it's actually a little more detailed than that, in that all-wheel drive has a lot more capabilities of controlling that all-wheel drive system. And four-wheel drive generally is a more primitive system in most contexts.
Is all-wheel drive a real computer-heavy kind of system in delegating power to the wheel that needs it the most, that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So all-wheel drive cars, and it started, I guess, back with, Subaru and Volkswagen or Audi, I should say, some of the first ones, but they utilize a computerized management system which integrates the anti-lock brake system, and so they sense when one wheel is slipping and apply the brakes to the slipping wheel, which then transfers more power to the other wheels that actually have the traction. So again, it's going to brake the wheel that's doesn't have traction, which then transfers power to the wheels that do have traction. And it can do that, many, many times each second, of course, at the speed of, the computer system. So it's constantly making these adjustments, which create an incredible sense of stability to the driver. If you've ever driven an all-wheel drive car in, snow-packed roads, you can just feel that car is working hard to stabilize itself, and where if you're driving a front-wheel drive car or, God forbid, a rear-wheel drive car in some weather like that, it's nightmarish.
I've noticed, too, with the all-wheel drive cars that you don't notice much of a change in handling, that their turning radiuses are still pretty good, whereas in the truck we own, for example, when I shift that into four-wheel drive, the turning radius is not nearly as good as it was a few minutes ago.
Right. Like I was saying, the modern all-wheel drive cars are so sophisticated, and the earlier ones, they did sometimes have problems with center differentials or transfer case setups where that could have been a weak point. But modern technology, they've figured out that was a weakness, and they've bolstered it. And these all-wheel drive cars, I find them to be actually they handle. I can tell the difference when I'm driving one in terms of, cornering at freeway speeds. Mm-hmm. I can usually feel. I don't know if – do you drive an all-wheel drive car right now?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay. Yeah, they just have a lot more – you can feel the stability. And once I went to an all-wheel drive car, it's pretty hard to go back.
I did test drive an all-wheel drive car, actually before I bought it. But one of the things they were showing me was, go ahead, just punch it to the floor, mm-hmm. and you'll notice that nothing skids.
Yeah. Exactly. So some of the, those are the advantages, but some of the disadvantages that a lot of people aren't aware of is all-wheel drive cars don't get nearly as good of a fuel economy as a front-wheel drive car. And that's because they're heavier. There's more powertrain equipment, so you're going to have a transfer case or center differential, they call it, and a rear differential, which a front-wheel drive car wouldn't have either of those. So there's a weight. But there's also just drag on the engine because that engine is powering four wheels instead of two.
Do the engines have to be bigger on an all-wheel drive car than for a two-wheel drive car?
Not necessarily. I mean, if you are at the dealership and you're selecting the car you want and you want the car to be all-wheel drive, they're oftentimes using the exact same engine as a front-wheel drive car.
All right. We have a call here, and I want to encourage other people to call as well at 800-838-3760 by phone. Emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. We're talking cars, car care, car maintenance with Zach Edwards in this month's edition of The Squeaky Wheel. And here's Louise in Ashland. Hi, Louise.
Hey, Louise.
Hi. Hi, what's going on?
My, My question is, I'm interested in the HCFCs that are eliminated by leaky car air conditioners.
Mm-hmm.
And the switch to HFO 1234. Can you talk to me about that and what's the difference? And how does it relate to climate change?
Well, that's a great question. And I have to tell you, I haven't done too much reading on the 1234 refrigerant yet, but I can tell you that the hydrofluorocarbons from that you referred to from R12 and R134A, basically what as I understand it, what happens is it splits the ozone by binding to, I think is ozone might be O2, and it makes it O3.
Other way around, I think.
Or the other way around, yeah. And so the idea of the new refrigerant 1234 is that it's not going to do that. When they switched from R12 to R134A, it was a huge improvement, but it wasn't everything that people were hoping for, especially environmentalists. It was a major improvement, but it wasn't ideal still.
So when I have my refrigerant changed, how do I know what's being put in?
Well, so depending on the year, make, and model of your car, in 1994 was when the government mandated the switch from R12 to R134A. And so what that means to you is, you know, your car was designed to use a certain type of refrigerant. And if you wanted to switch, say your car was built, you know, in the R12 days, you could actually pay and have it retrofitted to R134A, which was a big improvement for the environment, but a slight reduction in cooling capacity. The refrigerant isn't quite as
effective.
It's not quite as effective as R12 was. But when a licensed shop or a certified shop does air conditioning repair, they have a machine which actually captures that refrigerant. So if we have to repair the system, say it's not working, but it hasn't lost its refrigerant, what they do is it's called recovering the refrigerant, and they pull the refrigerant out and store it in a tank, like a propane tank, very similar to that, make the repairs, and then recharge, or it's refilling the system, but we call it recharging. Because it's not a liquid, it's a gas.
And the same stuff is used?
Yep, the same stuff. And so that storage tank, which is built into the machine, holds a supply of the refrigerant. And so that we store it there while we make the repair, and then we recharge the system to its full capacity.
So, Louise, what age is your car?
Oh, it's an 04.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that uses R134A. And they're probably, you know, one of the reasons I'm not too well-versed with this new refrigerant yet is because it's not really applicable in our life yet in the independent shop. Dealerships are having to deal with it right now, and they all have the new machine because, you know, it's very new technology.
Okay.
I'm real close to having to dig into this and probably purchase a 1234 machine. And then my guess is that there will be eventually a retrofit available if someone wanted to switch over their 134A system to a 1234 system.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet.
Thanks, Louise. Appreciate you calling. Other calls are welcome here at the Squeaky Wheel at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. I hadn't even thought about that part of your business generally, though, is that since you're not a shop at a dealer, you're going to deal with things a couple of years later, because of the fact that the dealer warranties are going to be handling the cars in the first few years that they exist.
Yep. Yeah, we almost exclusively exist in 3 to 5 year old cars. That's the newest cars we do repairs on. Now, we do a lot of maintenance on, you know, brand new cars. Someone can buy a new car and bring it to us for the 15,000 mile service or the first oil change even. And we do that with a lot of Subarus. A lot of Toyotas come in. But
other than that, it sounds like the newest things you're seeing are like, hoo-hoo, 2015 model year. This is our new stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So that's when a car might start to have repairs that are not covered by the factory warranty.
All right, so you mentioned Subarus, which brings us back around to all-wheel drive and four-wheel drive again. I mean, these are really sophisticated systems, all-wheel drive. So do things go wrong with the computerized part of it, let alone the mechanical part of it?
Sure, yeah. Stuff happens. As we continue to learn from the mistakes of the past, though, cars just get better and better and better, and the problems are less and less. But when they do occur, they can be more and more difficult to chase down. And so, because there's so much technology happening, the technicians, I always like to applaud them. I mean, these guys are so smart, and they have to use so many different resources to get to the bottom of some of the problems that are affecting modern vehicles. And so it's just a increasingly difficult job. And I know we've talked about the labor shortage on the show too. It's really, really difficult to keep a shop staffed up with as many technicians as we need. So we need some of these young kids to who are interested in cars to go to a trade school and start a career, because with this shortage, the pay is going up.
I was going to ask if the pay is pretty good, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a technician can make in a larger city, technicians can make up to $150,000 a year. And that's a guy that's working really, really hard and is really, really bright, smart, well-tooled. These guys have their own tools, and a lot of times they have $30,000 to $50,000 worth of hand tools.
Wow. How much does intuition and hunch playing still come into it, though? I mean, when you think about all the diagnostic tools that a car has, you plug your car in and it tells you what's wrong with it in some cases. But I imagine there's still a few things where you have to listen for the funny whine or the intermittent sound or that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's the part that you just can't teach. That's the experience aspect of it. So we will always tell a young person who's wanting to get into the field, you've got to go to school. You've got to get the book smarts dialed in, the book knowledge. But then there's the hands-on aspect of the job that it just takes time. And because, like you mentioned, intuition is such a huge part of it. You have to be thinking about, what could be causing this noise and what else do I know? What do I know and what don't I know? And how do I decipher what my next step is going to be based off of the information I have? And it's a guessing game a lot of times, but there's a method and an approach that a good technician is going to use, and that approach gets honed and refined with every day as a learning experience out there for these guys. And I oftentimes wish, how lawyers and doctors, they practice law and mm-hmm. they practice medicine. Well, we practice auto repair, but we don't get to say that.
That's right. Everybody wants it to be perfect. It's not practicing. You're always perfect. Funny enough that when we're talking about the all-wheel drive, a lot of calls about Subarus. So Stephen and Eugene is asking, why is it that all four Subaru tires have to be replaced if one tire gets shredded?
That's a great question, Stephen, and I was going to bring that up. With all-wheel drive, they're very sensitive to wheel rotations, and if you have one tire which is more worn out than another tire, that tire is going to rotate at a different rate. And it's microscopic, but it's detectable by the car's computer system. And so the other thing is that there can be a mechanical failure that happens inside that center differential or that transfer case type of drivetrain component, which damage can result in there when you have a wheel spinning at a different rate of speed than the other wheels. And so that's why it's critical for any of the listeners who have all-wheel drive cars, always look at your tires. When you walk out to your car, you should just kind of keep your tires on your radar, because if you have something starting to go on with your tires, you want to get it handled right away. Otherwise, you'll be replacing all four. You can't just buy two tires with an all-wheel drive car. You always have to buy a set. And so you want to do your rotations on a real regular basis, wheel balances, and in general, you just want to be aware of your tires, tire pressures. And
so alignments and things, too, I'm thinking, just to make sure the tires wear evenly.
Yep, it's a good thing to get an alignment check probably, once a year, just have it checked. If you ever hit a big pothole or say you, get a little too close to the curb when you're parallel parking or pulling into next to a curb and you hit that curb hard, you can knock that wheel out of alignment.
To say nothing of losing your hubcap, which I think happened to me.
But yeah. And so once your wheels are out of alignment, the tire is not going to wear properly. And so you're going to cause some sort of event on that tire, which is going to, in the case of an all-wheel drive car, force you to have to buy all four tires, which is expensive.
Okay, one final question before we go, and this comes from my own car and truck experience. We do have the shiftable four high and four low. What would we use the four low for?
Four low is used for straight driving. You can't really take corners in four low, and it's made for very slow speed four-wheel drive applications. So, like, if you needed to drive under 10 miles an hour, it's just going to really lock those four wheels into a four-wheel drive situation.
Really steep and really muddy, perhaps?
Yep. Just anything where you need all the help you can get, and you're not going to drive in excess of maybe 10 miles an hour.
Okay.
I would always encourage people to read their owner's manual about their four-wheel drive or all-wheel drive systems, because owner's manuals are just packed full of useful information which could save you a lot of money.
Yeah, great tips, and like when to put it on, when to take it off, how to put it on and take it off, locking
exactly.
hubs, all that stuff need
exactly.
to know. Zach Edwards, our guest once again on The Squeaky Wheel. He is the proprietor at Ashland Automotive. Take it easy.
Hey, you too. Thanks, Jeff.